and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, I have a very special guest, one Thomas Oliver. Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Jay. How are you?
I am super. So, Tom, could you introduce yourself to all the listeners?
Sure. My name's Tom. I am from Sydney, Australia. I've been playing the game for about 10 years, and I have a mild case of faction ADD, which means that I've played a lot of different factions. I've done pretty well on the competitive scene. I think I talked about that last time I was on the show. I've done well at our Super Series, which is the equivalent of our War Machine weekend. Done well in our Australian team championships. Majority of my career, I played Retribution, but I also have spent a fair amount of time playing Trolls, Circle, and Crucible Guard. I'm a gigantic nerd. I'm currently like really in between being very busy with work, really trying to build up a bit more of a community in Sydney. We've sort of got a very experienced player base, but it's pretty small. Thanks to the pandemic and all that sort of jazz, we've sort of taken a bit of a tone back from our competitive scene for a little while, and I've really been trying to build up our scene with a bit more of like a slow grow league and getting new players in like with that. So at the moment, I've been playing a lot of Brawl Machine more than anything else, which has actually been super fun.
Nice. All right. So just as a quick reminder to listeners for the format, we'll talk for about 45 or 50 minutes and for the main free episode. And then we will do a bonus episode for the people who are backing us on Patreon that everyone should join in and listen to as well. And it'll be about the same length. So we have a bunch of questions from the people who are supporting the Patreon.
Yes, sweet.
The first question is from Gigantor.
Hey.
And he says, who has the best beard in War Machine?
I think that's a pretty easy answer, Josh. I do. But secondly, you're a glorious and beautiful human being who I am really, really waiting to see the borders open up so I can come and give you a gigantic cuddle. Because for those who don't know Josh, there is nobody in the game who gives better cuddles than he does, or bigger cuddles than he does. He is a beautiful fuzzy man peach, as I would like to affectionately refer to him as. But to answer the question, I have the greatest beard in War Machine.
Okay, well there you go. Here is his follow-up question.
Oh, cool. Yeah, good. Real question this time.
Which casters are viable competitive options, and in what themes?
Sure. So for Retribution, I think that before like I start talking about Retribution, I think it's really important that we sort of, or at least I clear the air for how I'm going to approach describing them, because I think that you get a lot of, to put it delicately, not helpful echo chambering, particularly on online forums when it comes to Retribution. They seem to be sort of be the current whipping boy faction for, masochistic and disappointed players. And that's about as delicately as I can put it. So, as far as competitive, I think that you're gonna, like, whatever I say is probably gonna be taken with, like, from the player base, with a little bit of, I'm not a grain of salt, but more, I think that you need to keep your options in your mind really open when it comes to this faction, because at its core, and I've been diving back into list building recently, I actually think that the faction is exceptionally deep and has a lot of viable competitive options, even without us talking about, you know, upcoming CID releases or Riot Quest releases or whatever's coming down the chamber. So with that being said, I think that competitive, I think that you've got a faction where there are only three casters that I would not take to a tournament and be happy about it. But I also think that you need to sort of have a good understanding of what is going to be around. And I think that Retribution is going to leverage that one of the hardest out of most factions. And because their casters are quite focused, and I wouldn't say mono-focused, like I don't think you got boring, like, this is the gun guy and this is the melee guy. But I actually think that you've got casters that present very clear strategies and the way they support models and things like that. So to kick that answer off, I think that all of them, I think that, that all of them are good, with the exception of Thyron, Virus 1 and Gareth 1. And even then, I could see arguments that those casters are also okay. But I think that what, when it comes to this faction, I think that, being cognizant of what's around you is going to, generate your competitive list builds. So I would take any of the other casters and I will just get Conflict Chamber up because, I'm doing this on my phone, so I can't get Worm up for a minute. But at the top end of the competitive end, I really, really consider, casters like Rahn, Virus 2, Gorshade 4, Gareth 2, to probably be at, like, the four that I'd be reaching for on a regular basis and probably to form the core of my list. And that's pretty much because you've got casters there that, present an obvious power level. And if there's nothing around to deal with them, then they're actually quite problematic. Rahn probably is the most clear example of where that works. Now the backlash to that would probably, the counterpoint to that would probably be that there is a lot of anti-magic in the meta and there's a lot of no push, no touchies, no knockdowns and all that sort of stuff. And like, whilst I would say, yeah, that can be a problem. I would also argue that is not every matchup, and Rahn is an exceptionally like flexible caster. In that, you know, you are bringing, yes, a very strong magic, theme, but that's also a like sort of a strategy and a theme that like enables a lot of really complex and well established, like play setups. So it's all about like knocking up, like lining your ducks up in a row so you can knock them down. Similarly, I think Gareth 2 is a bit of, like, you've got casters like Gareth 2, Assyria, Raven, who are bullies, as is Alara, sorry, where you're presenting really, really strong threat projection all game, every game. And I think that that's really, quite important. And then you've got casters like Virus 2, who I would consider to be an exceptional tech piece. And why I say exceptional tech piece is because, like, at its core, I think Retribution is a gun-based faction. They've always presented with an exceptionally strong shooting phase. And by exceptionally strong, in some cases, I would even argue busted, and we'll talk about some of the pieces, I'm guessing, later on, like your Tridents and Mage Hunters and things like that, historically have been very powerful. And at the moment, you've got a game where guns are good, like they are absolutely excellent. But sometimes you run into scenarios where you need something other than like a gun list. And that's where I'd say like your Rahns and your Virus 2s. And Virus 2 is a really good list, from my experience playing into things like Faithful Masses, because you've got a lot of ability to deny kills with things like Sirens. And then you've got really good ability to generate like lots of damage with, you know, even just having a single unit of Sentinels as like a counterpunch to, like, you know, your Lightjack soaking up, you know, two attack charges from single models. So like going down the list, I think Alara 2, Gareth 2, Gorshade 4, Helena, Assyria, Kaelissa, Ossian, Rahn, Raven, Virus 2 are all excellent, excellent casters. I think that kind of is a pretty clear stance on where I sit with the faction. I think like it's actually, I would consider that Rhett has one of the deepest rosters of options in the game for casters. And for pieces to do different things. And that's based on A, what their casters are bringing, and B, the tools that they have the ability to select. Just the fact that every Warjack has a gun, that has a different effect is huge. Which means that you can, do lots of different gears even within a singular game. The fact that, like, a caster like Gareth 2 has, you know, one of the best spells in the game, in my opinion, which is Mortality. And that doesn't have to be a gun-based spell. You can use that to, you know, gank idiots in melee. So I think that you've got to be really, like, and that's all going to be generated off understanding and probably anticipating what's going to be around you. And if you can do that, you can leverage the faction pretty well competitively. So, yeah, I think that answers the question. Thanks for the question, Josh. Yeah.
So the next question comes from Zach Witten. He says, if the Trident suddenly disappeared, how would you compensate with list building?
Look, you would have to rethink the faction and the way you approach the faction a little bit. And not that I think that I'm going to preface this because otherwise, Nathan Frawley, who you've had on a previous episode to talk about Crix, is going to drive to my house and beat me silly. The Trident is an inherently broken model, in the way that it does things. That doesn't mean that it's necessarily the most broken model in the game at the moment. And I think there's a lot of things that have been released since it came out that sort of, that might punish it a little bit. If the Trident disappeared, I think that you need to really, really hone in on very efficient list design. I think the faction would struggle, to be perfectly honest, but I don't know if they'd be gone. I think that's where, like, losing that is where casters like Rahn become, again, really powerful, because he sort of does, like, machine gunning him, like, with his army. That's where I think casters like Ossian come back into the fore, but you have to be a bit more flexible with how you want to approach the list. You would be happy about PP taking away Tridents. Not that I think they are going to. I think that you need to have a very strong foundational understanding of what each caster is wanting to do and building around that and building a really linear, game plan from that. And not crutching on really large, very powerful models, that make up the bulk of your list. Because, I mean, the Trident is a crutch, and when I was playing Ret competitively towards the end of last year, which was we've been really fortunate in Australia that James Morehouse has been running tournaments in Canberra, which is only like a 3-hour drive from Sydney, so we've had pretty regular tournaments, so I've been able to play each of the factions that I own in a tournament this year, and have done pretty well with them, which has been kind of nice. So I played Ret in a tournament once or twice this year, and they feel fine. But I do think that in a competitive pairing, I think that you always want a Trident hanging around. Because it's really flexible. It can machine gun a whole army down. A single Trident can machine gun a whole army down. It can do significant work to heavies over the course of a game. It's an excellent solo killer, and it means that you've always got long threat ranging pieces that have cool tech, that, like, are good at killing casters, and they're good at, they're also a threat range extender. Like, you know, they are the whole package. Almost to the point where, like, they're almost like having, certain spells that some casters were never designed to have to a list, which is pretty, pretty powerful. They're also really gun resilient models, which is nothing to be sneezed at. I don't know if that's, I think that if you're seeing guns at the moment, the guns are going to be competent enough at shooting down Tridents, but that's not necessarily going to be the be all and end all. And I don't know if that's going to be something you'd, like, always concerned about. Tridents are good. Tridents are very, very good. Tridents might even be a little bit busted, but that's not to say that they need to go away or they need to be fixed. I think that they've been, at least the game around them has been adjusted to. However, with the way in which the game is developing at the moment, and for those internationally who haven't been playing in person much, I'm really, really, really not happy that Primal Terrors is back, because that was never a fun list to play against. And we've got a few very, very competent Primal Terrors players. And thankfully, the Trident is a pretty good piece for dealing with that list. Not like the be-all and end-all, but it is one of the more efficient ways to play into that list, which is, you know, cast things like Mortality on it and then, you know, shoot a bunch of Power 15s, boosted Power 15s into Ogre Mans, and then hopefully they die. So I think you'd be okay. You just need to think more than anything.
Okay, so his next question, he asks, what are your recommended first 3 to 5 purchases for the faction?
Be sensible with which caster you start with, is the first one. If I was getting someone into playing Ret, there would be some casters that I'd say no for the starters. I'd say Rahn and Assyria might be two that I would steer people away from. Rahn, because you have to build a list around the caster, which means your first 5 purchases are dictated by things like Battle Mages, Magisters, and Arknodes. Which are good models, but Battle Mages I don't really foresee wanting to take with many other casters, so I think that's a bit of a waste. And Asiria, from a, if we're talking about a new player, I think Asiria is an exceptionally strong caster. But I think that she is, in the hands of a new player, very much a one and done caster. Like, you build for that feat turn and you win or you lose, based on how well that goes, because she runs out of gas pretty fast. That can be quite unforgiving for a new player. So if I establish that as sort of the framework, I think you've got a few really good casters for new players to take. I think, Alara 2, Garrus 2 are both fantastic casters. Gorshade 4 can be really good for them. And Kaelissa would be like, those would, like, not necessarily the first four, but I would start a new player to the faction with one of those casters. Because they're flexible, they're pretty linear, they can play with a lot of different themes and different things. Then from there, I mean, look, if you want the easy button, you go and buy two tridents. If you want flexible, I think that you consider which theme you're going to go with. Fortunately, tridents play in every theme, except for Shadows of the Retribution. But, understanding what warjacks you'd need, is important. I think the House Vile Lights are really good. Harpies in particular are exceptional with most casters. Warjacks like Banshees are exceptional. And then I'd be, like, in terms of units, I'd be looking at making sure that you understand which theme you're going to be slotting into, because the themes will really direct how you purchase from there on out. I'd say Legions of Dawn or, the House Guard theme, Defenders of Ice would be the way to go. So if you go Legions of Dawn, I'd say that you'd want a unit of Sentinels and probably a unit of Desters. If you're going for, Defenders of Ios, I'd say things like Rifts of Ast Defenders and Stormfall Archers are really, really good. The Armor-Piercing Rifle teams are really good. Then you've got a whole range of busted as all hell solos that slip in there. Also, the Hermit of Henchhold, because Retribution has one of the most abusive Hermits, particularly in Defenders, where he's got Reposition 3, which means that he is pretty silly for getting the armor debuff out in a faction where their armor doesn't really matter because they're not competing for, the possibility of staying around once something comes into them. So yeah, I think those are, and the essentials, and then you've got other essentials like solos, like, Silas, you need to buy Arcanists, like those are a must have. If you're looking to play a Brawl Machine list, I would just be focusing on, like, which warjacks, what unit, and, which solos outside of Arcanists you would want to be taking.
So real quick, let's touch on what sort of starting Jack loadout would you recommend people invest in?
That's a good question. I'm really a fan of the House of Vile Lights as far as the light warjacks go. Like I said, I think Harpies are fantastic. Thunderbolt gun with power to 13 and rate of fire 2 is unreal. So I would possibly go there, maybe pick up a couple. As far as heavies go, you've got a very mixed bag. I think the Banshee is excellent. I think the Phoenix is a very good warjack with some casters. But then I think you're actually going to the heavy territory, the character territory. And I think Imperatus is a good pickup, especially if you want to play Legions of Dawn, because, a lot of casters that play in that theme really, really like him. So casters like Virus 2 absolutely loves him. Raven really likes him because she's got locomotion. Asiria really likes him. Kaelissa likes him. Gorshade 4 likes him. Like, everybody likes Imperatus because who doesn't love a heavy warjack with the damage grid of a colossal, with sidestep and cool attack shenanigans? So I think that's where you go. I think the Hyperion is still a warjack, like a colossal that is worth picking up for new players. But you got to be mindful of which caster you're picking up. So if I was picking up Raven to start with, who's actually another excellent starting caster. If I was picking up Raven, if I was picking up Asiria, potentially even Helena, I would be going down the route of a Hyperion. But otherwise, then you're pretty safe from there. I've got the joy of owning the entire faction painted to FA. So I don't really have to go with, like, which ones do I want to buy next? Because I've got them all. But I like, if you want a cheap heavy, the Sphinx is actually a good warjack. I'm not a big fan of things like, Manticores, which are just because their guns are a bit lackluster. The Wall of Fire, the covering fire, is actually quite good. Like, you know, I think that they're a bit of an anemic Jack otherwise, so you need a caster that really leverages their ability to then hit in melee, because their guns aren't that amazing outside of covering fire, and if you've got a meta where that's useful, good for you. But if not, then they're a bit whatever. I'm a big fan of the Hydra. I own a lot of them. And I think that the Hydra is a really interesting tech piece. Retribution are one of the weird factions, is a weird faction in that it is actually really good at running, really, really good at running, Jack Marshalled Warjacks. And the Hydra and the Harpy, I'd say, are the two best. Maybe the Siren if you're going for, Legions of Dawn, because that theme gives the flank bonus. But because the Hydra doesn't lose its focus, I played for a long time a run list that ran an Artificer running a Hydra. It's a Warjack that keeps its focus turn to turn, so your Arcanist can load it up, and it gets it's also a Shield Guard, so it can take, like, you know, Shield Guards for solos that get plinked or whatever. And then it's also a pretty big beast in shooting, because it's a range 15, power 15 gun, which is, you know, turns out is excellent. But then it's like, as a Jack Marshall Warjack, it's also, I think one of the best melee heavies in the faction, because it gets the highest power with the highest number of attacks, which is pretty groovy. So yeah, so there's, and then, you know, all the Warjacks are actually pretty good, with probably the exception of the Gorgon. I'd say that Warjack is a bit whatever. But all the other Jacks have a really clear purpose, and they're all actually pretty fantastic.
All right, so the follow-up question from Zach, he says, is Rhett anime? And if so, is it good or bad anime?
Ooh, so my really, really novice weeb skills are going to come out here. Rhett, I guess, is anime. It's a bunch of dudes with big swords and clunky armor running around. You've got, like, from a fluff standpoint, you've got Virus and Makeda literally having a 27-day sword fight in a forest where they're jumping from tree to tree, which is groovy. Good or bad anime? Are we talking, like, are they the good guys in an anime, or are they bad guys, or are we talking about quality of anime?
I think he's saying quality.
Quality? Some parts are good, some parts are bad. Like, you get really depraved stuff, like the Gorshade storyline, where he's running around stomping on babies' heads. So I guess, like, I'm a fan of, like, darker anime, so I guess that's, you know, cool. But then you've got, like, pretty boring anime, like, I don't know. Let's go with they're good. It's good anime.
Okay.
I don't quite know how to answer that one.
His next question is, what caster should a first-time rep player start with?
I would be going for Gary 2. Gareth 2, sorry, not Garrett. His name, we call him Gary in Australia. And Gareth 2 is the nuts, particularly when you've got a very variable game happening around you. So, like, lists I actually think are a little bit unpredictable at the moment, because people aren't able to, like, you're not seeing everybody going rushing out to buy everything that's OP. At least we haven't in Australia, which has actually been nice. I think the pandemic has slowed that down a little bit, so people are playing with things for a little bit longer, but that means that people are, like, you know, some people are adopting new stuff, some people aren't. Let's not say that we've got, like, outdated lists down here, just in terms of, like, we don't have, you know, 13 players that are all playing Fiona 1 and Aurora 2. But I think Gareth is a very flexible caster for solving problems. And he plays in all of the themes pretty well. And at the end of the day, he himself is a beast at using his gun. So, you know, there's a massive fun factor there. The other caster that I'd say for first timers that I really, really like is Raven. Again, she does good work, personal work on her own. And she's got a very strong feat and very good spell list that is pretty straightforward to use. So those would be my two.
Okay. And then the final question from Zach, he says, what is your current two list pairing if you're going into a major tournament and why?
My current two list pairing, I had a bit of a think about this, because I felt like this might have been a question that would come up. I would probably be reaching for Virus 2 in Legion of Dawn. As a list that I think is important for Rhett, because Menoth is a huge problem for them. So I'd be taking that. And the list that I've been running, or the list that I've been really keen to get on the table, runs like three harpies, I think it's like three or four griffins, and then a couple of sirens, and then a unit of Dawnguard sentinels. And it's just like, it's got good poke, like harpies, it turns out, are excellent guns. You got a couple of ghost snipers in there, and Virus's gun itself is good. So you can thin lines out. And then Siren's guns are good. They're just a little bit shorter range. So they're pretty sweet. But then from there, you can grind out most melee lists, with the exception of, I'd say, of New Legion. And I'd say that I'd be very interested to see how that list plays into something like, Aurora 2. I think that you'd probably have problems there. With that in mind, if I was running into a major tournament and I was like dead set on winning, I would probably be anticipating that, that things like your Clockwork Legions and your, Primal Terrors are pretty big, which are like very like hard to win in the melee game sort of scenario. So I'd probably be going for Gareth too, because he's really flexible. I'd probably be going with him in, Defenders of Ions. And leveraging a bit more of a gunline approach. And that means that you've then got a caster who, in Virus 2, who's actually quite good into guns. And then you've got Gareth 2, who's quite good at being a gun. Like, you've got a question and an answer list, to an extent. I don't think it's the most amazing option. But I think those are quite good. I think that if I was running into a tournament where I was really terrified, if I was like, not so worried about, Clockwork Legions, but then really terrified of Primal Terrors, and I'd be flexing out for Gorshade 4. And if I was sort of, if I was pretty happy with it being an more open field, I would be going for Ran all day, every day, because I think he's the most fun caster in red. And I'll go to my grave saying that, because that was the reason why I got into the faction in the first place, for one of the two reasons. I think you anchor the list. I think you anchor the pairing with Virus 2 because Menoth is such a problem. Because Menoth, somebody has to be number one, and Menoth answer this faction pretty well. And he's good there. And then I think from there you sort of flex around that. Being very mindful of what's around you.
Awesome. Okay. So next question is from Tokenator. Uh-huh. He says, how will Helena be changed in your opinion?
Look, I don't know what you really do to the caster to make her better than what she currently is, with maybe the exception of giving a she's got a threat extender, she's got an armor buff, she's got a damage output, she's good, she's a very good caster. Rhythm of War is an amazing spell. It's just a shame that the biggest bet buff that you could give to Helena is to put the House via Warjacks into Forges of War, so that you can get more focus efficient.
That'd be amazing,
wouldn't it? It would be like that. And look, I'm not holding my breath, because that is a question, an ask we've had for going on 3 years. But if you could get that happening, then you just wind up with like a super efficient, really cool gun line with light Warjacks who actually hit pretty well in melee. So you've got, like, you can then leverage it. And I think that you retool the entire faction by doing that. And Forges of War becomes an amazing theme list. So I agree. That would be amazing. As far as what she does, I think I could see them throwing something like Resourceful on her, because she's obviously meant to be the Warjack caster. So you give her the ability to upkeep spells for free, or give her something that makes, I don't know, casting Hand of Destruction even better. Easier, but then I'm also not in the camp that's necessarily good for the game, of just being like, all we want to do is make things crank damage output higher and higher, easier and easier to do. Cause I think that's where the game's been going for a little while. And I don't know if that's necessarily positive design. I think that Hand of Destruction is like a very powerful spell. And we're seeing that on, Aurora 2, and you're combining that with Rhythm of War. So you got like, if you can be tagging that out like regularly, then you've got this like OP gun line happening. But I don't know if that's necessarily going to be pleasant for new players getting into the game, where it's just like, all right, so this is a gun line, and then this is how it works. And I hope you had fun, because I deleted everything and you didn't get to do anything. So like that's one thing that I don't particularly like. But then at a higher level of competitive play, I think that you're I think she's okay. I don't think she's like our number one competitive caster. I think she's fine. I've taken her to tournaments before and done quite well. but I think I think leveraging that out easier is not the way to go. I don't think you add more armor to her feet. I don't think that you necessarily do that. Maybe give her gun a little bit of extra range because the pull gun is pretty cool. And I don't know if there's much threat in that, in doing that, because it's we're talking about a world where shooting is good but not OP. So shield guards are pretty consistently in lists, particularly with models like the Wastelander being released, where everything has most lists will have a shield guard. But I think that could be a cool way to fix her. Well, not fix her, just tune her up. I'm really excited to see. She's the cast that I've probably struggled the most with sort of figuring out what they are going to do with her, because I think that she was actually pretty okay to begin with. But I would really like to see the Viajax in Forges and have done so for a while. But she's by no means the worst of those Battlebox casters. In fact, I'd say she was probably the most tournament viable, with the exception of Tanith and Ragnar.
So we have some questions now from Dragon Pup. The first one says, what drew you into Rhett initially?
That's pretty easy. I got beaten by them a lot. I got beaten by them a lot. back in Mark II, I was playing Signar and Trolls a lot. And we had, locally, we had Jeff Galea and Dylan Simmer playing Retribution. And then another guy, Dan. Three exceptionally good players during Mark II. And I just got spanked all day, every day. I would consistently be like, all right, sweet. I've made it to top round, final round of the tournament, and run into one of those three and be like, I got no game. I got no business being in this game. So I think that I developed a little bit of Stockholm syndrome and, fell in love with the thing that was hurting me the most. So that was the big reason why. The other thing that drew me into it is that I had a buddy who was getting out of the game, and he sold me three factions worth of armies for a very little amount of money. And the army that I wanted to keep out of them was the Retribution one, and I really enjoyed painting them. I'm a pretty avid painter, do a lot of commission painting and things like that, and Retribution was one where I got to flex a lot of those skills, so that really drew me into the aesthetics side of things. It's the most complete army I've ever painted. I'm not lying when I said I've now painted the whole faction to pretty much field allowance, with the exception of a few units. From a gameplay, I'm sure you remember, Jay, in Mark II, Retribution could be pretty abusive. When Assyria came out and, her running a Hyperion and Mage Hunters, and in a game where that was conducive, that was a bad feelings experience, if you weren't ready for it. Having
I was gonna say, one of the things that was always kind of interesting to me was that especially in Australia, it seemed like there was a lot of Rhett that was dominating the meta. A little bit more so in Europe, and then not really so much in America.
Yeah.
And it was just always kind of a funny dynamic to me.
It's interesting. I guess and this is my observation of America, and this is nothing on the quality of players in America, but I think when you've got factions that are borderline marginal, there is sometimes been that sort of gets overcome by there being a champion that arises for that faction.
Right.
Someone like JVM is a fantastic example. Keith back in the day with Crix and Signar, yourself with Signar at one point, at certain points, and or with Trolls, for example, it became the people, oh, this person did really well with this faction at this tournament.
Right.
Oh, right. Didn't they just do well at another tournament? Yeah, they did. Oh, they must be doing really well with that faction. And I don't think Rhett has ever really had that experience. I think you've had some people that have played them well and done really well. I can't remember for the life of me the guy that won the Iron Gauntlet last year. That was awesome to see happen. But I don't think that Rhett as a faction has ever really had that champion.
Yeah. Ironically, that was a German transplant into America.
German transplant into America. Cool. well, I guess he's doing good work over there. He's he saw the need. Yeah, he saw the need for a champion and moved his ass over there.
it is also so like I've been doing I've been podcasting for a long time at this point, and it is kind of funny that. You know, when I started podcasting, Rhett was kind of a running joke on the podcast and kind of justifiably so because they just weren't as good as the other factions. Yep. They didn't have as many releases. They, you know, some of their releases weren't that good. And so they were often the butt of jokes that I made, but.
Yep.
They certainly come a long ways, and obviously I just the game in general. Like there was, I remember Rickard winning a major event with minions, and I was just like flabbergasted by it because there was just such a power disparity in the game at that point with some of the factions, minions being one of them. Obviously, I'm happy that I feel like that's no longer the case. There are obviously, it's not a perfect balanced game, but it does feel like there's no faction at this point that if you said, you know, X faction won a tournament, I'd be like, what? How did that happen? Right? It's
100%.
Everything is a lot more viable now.
Yeah, I agree. And like, you know, you're going back to Mark II and like looking at Rickard, he won like, was it War Machine Weekend or something with minions? Like it was a big tournament.
I think it might have been TempleCon or AdeptiCon.
Yeah. Like that. Which was huge, right?
And you turn around
and you're like, what the, like, I ever living, like, fuck just happened, pardon my French. But I think that Mark II were, like, that's part of, sort of quite reflective of the game that Mark II was, which was that, like, you had top dogs, as far as lists were concerned, and then you had, like, and then everyone else was their bitches. And then sometimes, you know, you had things that counted, things quite well. So like, and that's where I think Rhett sort of had a bit of an edge in Mark II, where like, you know, if you had a tournament full of people running around with, people, Arcane Shield and Stormwalls, then like an Assyria or an Ossian feated Mage Hunter Strike Force unit just made that player's day awful. But I agree, like when they first came out and like, I remember, cause I sort of got into the game, right at the tail end of Mark One, and like started playing in Mark Two, which is when Retribution got released. They were a very small faction when they first started out, and there was not like you had like it was like Raven and Rahn were kind of it as far as casters that did anything interesting, and even then like they didn't have the tools to do that interestingly enough. So I think it took a long time for them to sort of get to a place where they presented a bit more of a threat, which was probably about mid edition of Mark Two. Which I think meant that you had a lot of people who got frustrated on them, and new players did, like in Australia, like our players did really well with them, like, not just in Australia, but like, you know, Dylan went over and did really well at the WTC with them. Jeff has done really well at the WTC with them, number of times. But it wasn't until things like Hyperion and Assyria got released, the faction really sort of started to feel rounded out. Like Assyria was literally the faction's first out for stealth. And then I think that it took a little while for people to adjust. And then Mark III, and then by the end of that edition, they were degenerate, with all the Mage Hunters, shooting your caster off the table theme force. And then come Mark III, they've definitely had their day and they've been abused. They've sort of done swings and roundabouts. But I think that the game is, like you said, in a place now where you can take any faction and you're good to go. And I think that with Red, that's no exception. I think that there's a lot of complaints, from people who, want to do really well with them, but also probably not willing to give up certain identity pieces in the faction to do really well with them, in order to build a competitive pairing. And that's just more like, symptomatic of the game around them at the moment, not necessarily the power of the faction. I don't even remember what the original question was, Jay. We've just gone on.
Yeah. No, that's fine. We've been on a journey together.
It's been great.
So next question from Dragon Pup.
Yeah.
He says, what caster do you have the most fun with? which may not necessarily be the best competitive option.
Most fun with, there's so many. And like Rhett is a fun faction. Again, I'm not like standing here championing they are the absolute top of the power curve, but they have some stuff that is like really fun to do. So Rahn has always been like my draw to the faction. He was the caster that I got the most into the faction for. And he's the one that I've done the best with. So I don't know if Rahn gets played a lot elsewhere, but if you don't play against him regularly, like he just
I don't know that Rhett's getting played much
elsewhere, right?
At least in America, period.
Yeah.
is for whatever reason, it seems like, you know, Rhett has kind of fallen off the face of the competitive map. Obviously that's going to vary a lot from location to location. Part of my assumption with that is that there's a lot of people who have felt a little bit too stagnated with either the Tridents or Gareth 2, or that there haven't been too many new releases that have had people excited. So I think a lot of people have been playing side factions rather than factions.
That's fair. And I think that's a really important point. It's why I now own multiple factions. Because I have no self-control and a bad spending habit. B, I like painting things. And C, I think having palette cleansers in this game is super important. As opposed to other miniature games, like, and I don't have a lot of experience playing a lot of other miniature games at the moment, but it feels like, you know, if I was going to play 40k, I could just pick up Space Marines and I'd just be a Space Marine player. And, you know, you roll up with the amazing, you're like, oh, this is bad. I'm going to roll some dice. Sick one, dudes. And like, you know, you're going to get your return on Space Marine. Whereas with this game, I think that the ebbs and flows of how factions work is probably almost more akin to like the way a Magic deck works, or at least a Magic Magic the Gathering archetype works. So I think that being able to then flex out and change pace and change the way that you're approaching the game, because each faction approaches the game quite differently, is super important. So like I could totally empathize that if somebody's feeling stagnated with Rhett, and I'm not saying that you're not allowed to, go and like by all means go and change, like rather than just sit around and get mopey and be unhappy, because nothing's going to make somebody drop the game faster than playing something they're not enjoying. But in terms of just to go back to Rahn, like Rahn is like super abusive if you don't know how to like play against him. Like the common joke that we have in Australia is like somebody puts down like a caster on the table, like Rahn on the table, and their opponent who hasn't played against him, it will ask the question, so how far does Rahn threat? And the answer is invariably yes. So like, you know, you've got a caster that just like pulls abusers. It feels like a real spank. The other cast that I was surprised with how fun she was, and this is actually off a list that Gigantor sort of put together, and then like I've riffed on it a few times and done like really well with it. And it's just silly, is in Raven, because of the interaction between things like Tridents and her feet, which gives Swift Hunter. So if you roll up like with a like, and we use the expression like basically because you get Swift Hunter off these Tridents, which generate like ridiculous amounts of shots. So like Trident A starts over on like the left side of the field and they're like back to halfway across the field by the time they finish shooting. We sort of adopted the term dino drifting into the Triassic period, because it just feels like you are just like, yeah, you are hitting the corner hard with that thing and just like skidding as hard as you can with it, which is pretty fun. So those are the two most fun factor casters in the game for Retribution. Which is kind of fun. And then you're like, yeah, and then having casters that are powerful is always fun. So Gareth 2 is fun when you're not playing in every game, all game.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of fun to be had.
Okay. So, the next question, is from Tokenator. He says, a question for you, Lore Master Jay, who is your favorite Elven god other than Nissor and Skyra from the Iron Kingdom's pantheon? I'm going to have to go with, Lilith, the god of autumn, because I like autumn. There you go.
Nice.
To turn this to you, do you follow much of the fluff of War Machine?
And yeah, man.
So what do you like about it with Retribution?
Yeah, dude, I love the fluff of War Machine, and I've been a big fan of it. There have been periods where it's been really accessible, and there have been certain things that made it really accessible, like for Red, if anybody can go and dig it up on the internet, into the Crucible, I want to say, like did a fluff episode on the history of Retribution like years and years ago. And if you don't know the fluff of Red, it's actually pretty good. which is sweet. Like, that's an old school shout out. I love the sort of the way in which the retribution emerge, in the fluff. So like the War of the Houses and Gershield, like, running around, doing basically Dr. Mangala sort of, experiments with infants. Not condoning Dr. Mangala like experiments on infants at all. But just in terms of, like, you know, retribution are a very clean cut faction that could kind of sort of look like your douchebag elves, like, in any other fluff context. And that it just sort of creates a bit of depth and character to them. So I really, really, really like, sort of the schismatic element of Ios in the fluff. And I wish there was more of it. I think that, like, you know, you've got some cool stuff happening at the moment with Gorshade and, whatchamacallit from Scorn, like, going around and, having little BDSM sessions with one of the Infernal Masters. You know, like, there's cool stuff happening there. They're not just, like, you know, high and mighty, like, highfalutin elves that sit in cloud fortresses, looking down on the world. They're like, there's a lot of sort of darker political things that happen. I think that's actually pretty cool to read into.
Yeah, they had a fair number of cool things that were going on with, in the Henchold Scrolls that they were doing. There was also a lot of stuff in going on with elves that was kind of the foundation of stuff going on with the Infernals. That was interesting as well.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that, they had a lot of pretty cool content they were putting out with the Enchanted Scroll stuff. And then, it feels like it kind of, stopped and just lost momentum.
Yeah. I think that's a real shame. I think we were meant to get more this year. And I don't know. I'm by no means an expert in how Privateer is doing, but I could imagine that they are, you know, putting all their focus into making sure things are out developed and delivered, and developing fluff at the moment might be a little bit secondary to working with what I could imagine is a tight schedule with a diminished crew, during, like, you know, this pandemic, which you guys seem to be having an awesome time with.
Yeah, that's one way of describing it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we can go ahead and pause here on the conversation. And, as a reminder, you can sign up on the Patreon to hear the second half of this conversation. And thank you to everyone who is supporting the podcast. Also be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com and Muse on Minis. And then finally, I wanted to thank you, Tom, for sharing your time and your expertise with us.
No, dude, always happy to chat. It's been good.
Awesome. So stay tuned for the next episode. Awesome.